Hi, welcome to this week's episode of Reflections on Logic of Inquiry. I am your host, Sarah Bostic. This week, I am continuing with the topic of critiquing white, cis, straight, masculine, colonialist methods, and to do so, I will be looking at two chapters from the 2018 book, Other Please Specify, Queer Methods in Sociology, edited by Delaine Compton, Tay Meadow, and Kristen Schilt. The first chapter I will be discussing is Chapter 10, Challenges, Triumphs, and Praxis, Collecting Qualitative Data on Less Visible and Marginalized Populations by Mignon Moore. And the second chapter I will be discussing is Chapter 11, How Many Queer Cases Do I Need? Thinking Through Research Design by Delaine Compton. Chapter 10, Challenges, Triumphs, and Praxis by Mignon Moore. In this chapter, Moore shares the insights she gained in the process of collecting data on hard-to-reach and marginalized populations, specifically Black and Latina lesbians. The creative approaches she used to address methodological challenges in the field, and issues she continues to experience as she collects interview and archival data. She focuses on gaining entry into diffuse and elusive populations, building relationships and trust while negotiating insider and outsider status, and exiting the field after becoming part of a community, in order to help the reader think about methodological approaches to qualitative study design and data collection on other less visible and stigmatized groups. Moore begins with gaining entry. Typically, the expectation is that a researcher will develop a research question and then seek out a gatekeeper to help facilitate entry or access to the group that one wants to observe. She explains that for her, this process worked differently. She actually first found a community she found sociologically interesting, and after becoming involved in that community and building relationships, then she moved to generating her research question. She befriended an older Black lesbian couple in LA that owned a wine bar, and this setting became a regular location for many community-oriented events. She elaborates on these events, discussing at length the process of creating activities that bring people together. To study the group she found sociologically interesting, she designed opportunities for members to come together, and in these settings, she was able to engage and understand them better. She didn't take field notes in the moment, but really worked to be in the moment and generate community. According to Moore, everyone benefited from these activities over the course of a few years. The community enjoyed these opportunities for socialization and fun, the wine bar gained new clientele, relationships were fostered, and she was able to gain access to social networks for her research. While the events were exhausting at times and involved financial risk on her part, these stressors were outweighed by fulfillment and reciprocity in creating LGBTQ events that centered on the experiences and interests of Black and Latina women. This filled a specific need for community among queer women of color in a gay scene in LA that tended to cater to white males. This work is very much in line with feminist epistemology and research methods that consciously attend to relationships, reciprocity, representation, and voice. In this work, Moore remained conscious of her own insider and outsider status while building relationships and trust. While she shared being a Black lesbian woman with many she interacted with in her fieldwork, she also was different from those given that she is an academic and some of those she engaged with had different cultural backgrounds. Moore acknowledges important points in this constant negotiating between insider-outsider status, and also discusses the importance in not seeking to sanitize the lives of those we study, because that can actually be pretty paternalistic. I found this last point especially helpful, so I'm glad that Moore mentioned it. Finally, Moore discusses the process of leaving a field after becoming so connected to a community. It was difficult to leave LA, but she was able to do it in steps, and she found that this was less jarring than if she were to leave immediately. For the Moore piece, I find the idea of creating settings in which to study hard-to-reach populations aspiring, and her devotion to generating community connection admirable. I do, however, wonder if the community she helped generate continued on after she left. I really do admire the amount of social energy she seemed to have to host these events so frequently. I also appreciate the ways in which her research process queered positivist conceptions of research. She befriended those she studied, became an involved community member. She found ways to give back to the community. This is important given the stigmatized nature of the group she sought to better understand. The insider status she shared with this group mattered in many ways too, but she also acknowledged that there was a simultaneous insider-outsider status she occupied in many interactions, and she was reflexive and maintained an awareness of this throughout the research process. Chapter 11, How Many Queer Cases Do I Need? By Delaine Compton. In this chapter, Compton continues the topic of studying hard-to-reach populations by discussing the LGBTQ demographic. In doing this, they give a pretty thorough crash course for what aspiring researchers on queer topics can expect from reviewers and colleagues in sociology. While Compton themselves work across the quantitative-qualitative divide, they note a so-called gold standard of research in the sociology discipline. This gold standard includes random sampling, replicability, and generalizability, the positivist triple crown that typically favors quantitative work as good sociology, what gets more easily published, what gets awards, what gets recognition. But up until recently, even quantitative scholars would avoid queer populations that were thought to be too messy for demography, due to the limited understandings of the population. How many LGBTQ-identifying people are there? Is the population too small to matter statistically? Even then, Compton writes on page 186, quote, "Queer research is more likely to get dismissed by journals on the basis of methodological critiques because of the heteronormative assumptions, practices, and biases embedded in the discipline's conventions," end quote. This results in a self-fulfilling prophecy, with a gap in sociological knowledge, a lack of inclusion, questions on the size of the LGBTQ population, and an avoidance of the topic because of all of the obstacles related to research design. So, how many queer cases do you need then? Well, Compton promises to tell us soon. To discuss these obstacles further, Compton describes sampling, access, recruitment, representativeness, and reception. Due to a lack of random dispersion of LGBTQ people and social stigma, it's difficult to achieve the gold standard of random sampling. Reviewers will push for work to be representative when sometimes that is not even within the scope of what your research question seeks to address or your data is capable of doing. The research may not be received well because reviewers and colleagues have very little knowledge of LGBTQ populations, and it is difficult to enumerate LGBTQ people to create statistically believable findings that debunk stereotypes about LGBTQ people. Compton's example here was about having to convince colleagues and others that there even was a substantial queer population in Texas due to stereotypes about queers gravitating to New York or San Francisco. It required gold standard level data from the U.S. Census to even begin to surmount this hurdle. So again, how many queer cases do we need? Compton promises they're going to tell us. While some of these problems are less of an obstacle today, all of these hurdles may lead qualitative researchers of queer populations to feel pressured to emulate quantitative approaches, beef up our sample sizes, appeal to a discipline so focused on statistical significance. Compton notes that it is important that we understand where our anxieties about sample size are coming from. So again, how many queer cases do we need, Compton? Please tell us. Okay, so sample size does matter, but Compton emphasizes that what really matters regarding size is how it relates to our research design and the questions we are seeking to address in our particular study. In terms of quantitative work, we need enough samples to arrive at the gold standard p-value threshold of 0.05. Ah, yes, okay. But what about for us qualitative researchers? Please tell us, Compton, we are begging you. All right. The moment we've all been waiting for, Compton. How many queer cases do we need so sociology will maybe give us a crumb of recognition? Will give us the stamp of legitimacy? Drumroll. Dum-da-da-dum. 30 cases. We usually will need 30 interviews or 30 cases to reach the point of saturation. In other words, most research in recent decades on queer populations has had a median of 30 cases, which is typically the point at which we are no longer receiving entirely unique responses from those we are sampling. After observing 30 cases, we can usually draw sound conclusions for our work. So Compton wants to encourage us to re-examine our anxiety about how many queer cases we need to earn sociological respectability, and also to consider that there is often a point of diminishing returns to expanding our samples. Collecting more cases doesn't necessarily mean we are garnering more information, and there are a number of factors we should consider when we determine our sampling size: resources, time, the scope of our research question, etc. But ultimately, we need to be conscientious in our methodological decision making. So what do you think, my lovely listeners? Are you a fan of the sociology gold standard? What are the pros and cons of such a standard? What are some underlying assumptions we make by adhering to such a gold standard? Are there benefits to be gained in challenging such a gold standard? What do you think of the idea of studying hard-to-find or hard-to-reach demographics? How does studying such populations challenge methodological mainstays of the sociological discipline? I look forward to hearing your thoughts. This concludes this week's episode of Reflections on Logic of Inquiry. Thank you for listening.